What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. I mentioned this in the last hour. It's not the hot dogs yet. I will get to the hot dogs and mayo. There was a protest. Hundreds of North Carolina daycares could close because they're not going to have any more of the COVID money. You know, we're still doing that. Were you aware that the COVID money is still? Oh, by the way, there's this story, too. 2021, the Biden administration got $42.5 billion from Congress to deploy high-speed internet to millions of Americans. Years later, it has not connected as many people to the interweb as they predicted. It says the number stands at zero, actually. None. They have not connected a single person. It now says that no construction projects are even going to start until 2025 at the very earliest. So this is how you know that a situation has been resolved, is when Congress swoops in with money. Right? That's like, you know, it's over. The crisis is over when Congress is like, here's some money to fix the thing. Okay. No, I kid, because look, I'm doing the story right now about all of the millions of dollars that they've been that they handed out, you know, helicopter cash, as it's called. It's an economic term. It's essentially that you're just like flying a helicopter overhead and just dumping cash out on top of people. Helicopter cash. That's what we did during COVID. And so one of the recipients of this largesse was the daycare industry. And so now the money's running out. There were two different tranches, as the finance guys will tell you, which just means like buckets. Right, or troughs. It's just, or like a foxhole filled with cash, right? So you get two different buckets of money, and one was for operations and one was for payroll. Well, the operations money ran out last year, I want to say. The salary money is fixing to run out, okay? And so now, oh my gosh, whatever will we do? We can't go back to the way things were. So now there is a lobbying effort underway to get the state to pay for the deficit, if you will. $300 million they want. $300 million for daycares in the state of North Carolina. Hundreds of child care centers. This is from Mary Calkins at WBTV. Hundreds of child care centers across North Carolina could be at risk of raising their prices or shutting down for good after Congress chose not to renew hundreds of millions of dollars in COVID-era funding. That funding will run dry on July 1st, meaning some families could have some tough decisions to make. Before the money runs out, owners of child care facilities are calling on state lawmakers for a $300 million grant extension to keep them afloat past June. Okay. As I understand it, this is a one-year deal. The money's running out. I'm not sure if the $300 million is amortized over a couple different years. You're supposed to spread it out or something. I don't know. Seems like it's for a one-year extension, though. But here's the problem. They're saying, well, you got this surplus. You got a budget surplus this year. And the state lawmakers have been on this mission for the better part of a decade and a half now to keep cutting the income tax rates. And there is a wing in the Republican Party that wants particularly the corporate income tax rate to be zero. So this way, corporations aren't paying taxes, which, by the way, corporations do not pay taxes. Businesses don't pay taxes. I understand that they sometimes have to write checks. I own a business, so I understand that. But all of that cost gets passed on to somebody else, okay? The consumer pays those taxes. When you buy the product or the service, the cost of the taxes is embedded in the cost of that good or service. Okay, so now you got sort of the backdrop. Let's head over now to there are a couple stories from Axios.com. Charlotte Axios. First story, and this was Wednesday. Lucille Sherman reporting, problems with childcare are costing North Carolina's economy $5.65 billion annually. Well, that's way more than the $300 million they're asking for. I sense an economic study coming, right? Economic impact study, anybody? Yes. Okay. Almost 3 in 10 childcare centers throughout North Carolina, almost 3 in 10. So not 30, not a third, almost 30%. Say that they would be forced to close if state lawmakers don't step in with financial support when pandemic-era grants expire at the end of this month. And then she cites a report by her colleague, Katie Peralta Soloff, and her earlier story, which came out about 2 weeks ago. And in that story, she is relying on a survey from the North Carolina Child Care Resource and Referral Council, or the North Carolina CCRNR, the North Carolina CCRNR, which, by the way, they did the survey. They are an advocacy group in the industry, so I always say the most important thing about any kind of poll or survey is who did it. That's the most important piece of information when you're reading any kind of a poll or survey. It's the first thing you look at. Because if it's coming from an industry, chances are they're not going to release it if it doesn't say the thing that they want it to say, right? Okay. So they say many closures, 29%, would mean a loss of care for some almost 92,000 children in the state. This would have ripple effects on the broader economy, experts say. This is according to a recent survey from the NCCRNR, which recently polled 1,500-plus childcare programs across the state. Most providers surveyed say they would have to raise tuition to stay afloat without government support. Does this sound like another funding mechanism? You got all of these private daycares that are operating. They're taking in the little children. And they need a bunch of government money. So they want the state to allocate $300 million. And that money then would go directly to the schools, or the daycares, rather. Almost as if the money is following the kid going to the daycare centers. How is this materially different than vouchers? This is the same funding mechanism, right? You're just not calling it opportunity scholarships. You're just going to pay. I mean, what would be the difference between paying directly to a private school? And I know one of the things they always hear is about the school vouchers is always something along the lines of, they get to deny admission. The private schools get to refuse potential, students from enrolling. Do daycares get to do that? What if your kid's a biter? Daycare gets to kick them out, right? Pandemic-era stabilization grants address two areas, operational costs and pay. There you go. The grants covering operational costs ended last April, and the ones covering pay are set to expire at the end of this month. These grants increased average teacher salaries. Teachers? Is that what we're calling daycare workers now? I was unaware of this shift. Did you get a memo on that? I did not. I'm usually up to speed on this stuff. I've not seen this shift occur. So now they're teachers, which almost makes me feel like they're trying to sort of piggyback on the PR that teachers get when they ask for pay raises, right? I'm not minimizing the work that daycare workers do. I was just unaware that now we're calling them teachers. Okay. All right, let me see here. I got a message on the daycare funding from John. He says, I can't believe that nobody has proposed the most obvious solution to rising daycare costs. The easiest way to implement a new government program is to copy a current program. That is a huge success. The rising cost of daycare has ripple effects. If people can't put their kids in daycare, they can't go to work. With the cost of employees and everything else skyrocketing under Bidenomics, which is pronounced Bidenflation, it is obvious that parents need help covering the costs. This would also get the parents into the system to use the same general program 12 to 15 years later when their kids go to college. That's right. We need to start a government-controlled daycare loan program where the children can take out loans to cover the cost of their daycare. I love it. I am all about solutions, John. That's a great idea. Tuition loans for toddlers. In fact, it reminds me of an idea that I pitched to the former Charlotte City Councilman turned Charlotte Mecklenburg School Board member, Coach Joe White, back in the day. I always had a good relationship with Joe, and one day we were chit-chatting about the expansion of pre-K, the more at four, and then I think, because I think they've expanded it beyond four to go even younger. Anyway, we were talking about, you know, all the outcomes of all of the different, students and trying to get everybody to pass. And I was talking about like mathematics and the bell curve and like how exactly can you say that, you know, every child is going to pass every single class? That's just mathematically an impossibility, unless, of course, the standards are so low that you're just, you know, handing out passing grades to everybody. So I suggested that the true way, probably the best way, albeit not the most cost-effective probably, but the best way to ensure equal outcomes through the K-12 experience is to remove the things that kids may have, aside from natural innate intellect, right? I mean, I guess we could maybe do some lobotomies or something on them to try to make them, well, or give the kids smart pills or something to boost their performance, but that's the separate equation. Like the thing I was trying to get at was parental involvement in their own child's education. And some parents just do not care. It's sad, but that's true. They don't care if their kids go to school. They don't care if they're learning. They're not monitoring them. They don't care. They don't value education. So I think the best way to get at this problem is right after birth, you take the kids and you put them into government schools. Just like as soon as they're out, because like, I mean, okay, maybe you give the new parents like, I don't know, an hour or two before you take them, because I'm not a monster, right? So you take the kid and you put them into the government system, and then every single kid going through the system will have the exact same opportunities, right, in the system. They'll learn all sorts of skills all at the same time. I'm sure, you know, the development of shanks will probably be a big deal, you know, early on, that kind of thing. But that's how I think you could, that's how you could make it more equitable in outcome, you know? No, he didn't, Joe. Yeah, he didn't agree with me on that for some reason. I don't know why. I think he thought I was kidding. It's weird. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? The U.S. Chamber Foundation, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, right? They have a foundation. In partnership with the North Carolina Chamber Foundation and NC Child, conducted a survey of more than 500 North Carolina parents of children under the age of six. So a survey of 500 parents. And using those results, the organizations estimated how often parents miss work or educational opportunities due to daycare issues. And they then use that to measure the impact of insufficient childcare on the state's economy. This is according to the piece by Lucille Sherman at Axios Charlotte. And that's where they come up with the $5.65 billion cost annually. Every year, we lose $5.6 billion in our economy because of daycare issues. Parents, you know, the daycare isn't open and the parent has to stay home or something, right? And so 3 in 10 child care centers throughout the state say they're going to be forced to close if state lawmakers don't step in and pay the ransom. I mean, give them a grant. They want the payout. Katie Peralta Soloff, also with Axios, she had a story a couple of weeks ago. 30% of North Carolina child care facilities could close without government support. And this is because the pandemic-era stabilization grants expire. The first round that was for operational costs, those expired back in April. The second group, the second bucket of grant money from COVID was to pay for what they're calling teacher salaries, an increase of about $2 to $3 an hour additional on the hourly rate, because child care teacher salaries remain $14 to $15 an hour in North Carolina. The North Carolina General Assembly is about to enter into short session. Child care professionals are asking for a one-time allocation of $300 million to extend stabilization grants beyond June. Okay. As I understand it, the pandemic is over. I'm not sure if there was a big announcement that it was over, but I kind of feel like it was over like a couple of years ago. Why have these organizations not adjusted to whatever the economics are at this point? Well, I mean, yes, inflation, sure. Your low pay for your employees makes it difficult to attract and retain workers when they can go literally to a fast food place and make as much money at $15 an hour, right? So I get that. But I'm particularly interested in the fascism part of this, which is the businesses that are pressuring the government to do stuff. There was a statement that was put out by the North Carolina Chamber of Commerce, and they're saying, we don't need any more tax relief. We're not trying to get to a zero corporate income tax rate. Some lawmakers are, but the chamber's like, they're like endorsing the idea that the state kick in money for the daycares rather than return the money to the taxpayers, right? Or lower the rates. Because that's, and by the way, this has always been the strategy with reducing the corporate income tax and the personal income tax rate, is that the state relies on these funding revenue streams. And so if you're going to start messing with the percentages and reducing the, you know, I think it was up at, I think it was 7%, 8% state income tax rate at one point. Now it's down, you know, 5%. So they keep, what they do is they knock a little bit off at a time and then they see what the revenue picture looks like. And as long as they keep bringing in revenue at, you know, what is the current clip, then that means they can take some more off. That's been their goal, and they've been doing this over the course of many years. And so the business community, the chamber, is saying, no, don't reduce the taxes anymore. Give the daycares this money. And the media is all over this because, it's the business group. That's the chamber. And Republicans listen to the chamber, which is not so true anymore. I'm not sure a lot of people in the media are aware of this, but a lot of conservatives have soured on the chamber. And it goes back to the immigration and amnesty issue. See, because the chamber had a different set of incentives and a different set of goals that it wanted on immigration, right? So they're wanting lots of people to come in to work in industries for low pay so they get to keep more profits. They also want government to fund now daycares. Here's an idea, businesses. Why don't you have a daycare? Right? If you're losing so much money, if I'm to believe that a $300 million grant for one time only is supposed to save us $5.5 billion, like what's the multiplier on that? Well, I would think then that if you were to create a daycare in your own business for your employees, you would be able to attract and retain. Well, first off, you'd be able to attract a lot of people with kids, probably. But you would also be able to attract and retain people that wanted that as a benefit. Now, that might mean you take less profits, right, business leaders? But if the payoff is so fantastic, then it seems to me like you would want that multiplier working for you, right? You would set up a daycare. This way, none of your parents could ever have an excuse. Oh, I didn't have daycare today. And by the way, not that I'm making any specific allegations against anybody particularly, nor am I saying all people that call in sick with daycare issues don't have them, but some of them don't. I'm not sure people are aware of this, so let me be the one to spill the beans. Sometimes people lie when they don't want to go to work. It happens. I'm telling you, by the way, stomach issues, GI issues. I don't want to be too graphic here, but you know, if you can't go far away from the toilet, like that's usually a pretty good excuse to call in sick over, because it's not enough where you're going to go get a doctor's note for that sort of thing. Usually passes after, you know, a day, so you can come back to work after the hangover is gone. And nobody's going to ask for verification, right? And they don't want to hear anything about it, right? Your boss is not interested in listening to you tell them about how many times you were going to the bathroom. Like, so it's just one of those excuses that people are like, ah, nope. Daycare is probably one of those types of excuses, minus all of the pooping, right? Well, though, it depends on how young the kid might be. But if you say, I have a daycare issue, then that usually is the end of the discussion. Because there are all sorts of laws and stuff, right? I'm sure that employers can't really push too hard or whatever. But like, oh, you know, everybody called in sick at the daycare. So what are you supposed to do? You can't get a doctor's note for that, right? You can't get doctor's notes for third parties that are supposed to be watching the kid. So sometimes people might be lying about whether or not they actually had a daycare issue. So if you're a business and you set up a daycare, well, now you're going to know, right? I would wonder. No, I wouldn't. I do wonder. I wonder if businesses that have daycares on premises, I wonder if they have lower rates of these types of sick calls, right? Because the employee can't call out sick and cite daycare as the reason, because the employer is going to know, no, everybody's on staff. They're all here today. What are you talking about? There's no daycare issue. You're going to have to come up with different excuses. Yeah, like I got GI issues. Exactly. Talking about this request at a rally of daycare owners, went to the legislature asking for $300 million to help them pay their staff because they were using one-time COVID money in order to pay them. And now the COVID money is expiring, which raises a question about economics and budgeting. So what happens? Let's just say you're able to convince the lawmakers to give you the $300 million or some amount of money close to it. And they put it into the budget. You get your checks. You then totally pass on all of that money to your employees. Sure you do. And fast forward a year. Now what do you do? Are you going to go back to the legislature and ask them for more money? And at some point, Does this just become an annual thing and you're like, you know what, rather than having us come down here and lobby you every single year, why don't you just build it into the budget and just give us the money? And now you're hooked, right? Now the daycares get hooked on the state grant system that you've created. Because you had a year. In fact, you've had more than a year. You've had a couple years to try to address whatever the fundamental structural problems you had in your business model, and you did not do so. You allowed the different pots of money to expire, and now you're racing to the legislature to get them to fill your budget gap. This is, by the way, earlier I talked about, in the last hour, I talked about the Moral Monday movement and their marches and protests and stuff. And I mentioned in the sort of the recap of the state history prior to the Moral Monday movement marches, or the prior to the the Democrats had created structural budget deficits in virtually all areas. Okay. Some of the biggest were in the unemployment insurance. I actually see, I'm looking at a tweet right now on the North Carolina Politics hashtag. In 2010, my spouse had to collect unemployment benefits, $350 a week. Starting Monday, he'll be unemployed again. 14 years later, the weekly benefit in North Carolina is still $350 a week. Right. And you know what happened 14 years ago when he was collecting the $350? And by the way, I was laid off in 2011. I got that. I received $350 a week. And you know what happens? You start getting pretty picky about what jobs you want to take because you're making $1,400, you're taking in $1,400 a month. Now, that's not a terrible amount of money. You're not going to get, I shouldn't say terrible. I mean, $1,400 a month is, that's enough for me to, you know, help pay the mortgage because my wife was working. I can help pay the mortgage, right? But at some point, there's a disincentive that kind of kicks in because I can get by and I can cobble together some part-time odd jobs around the neighborhood, whatever, sell some stuff on eBay. And this was before influencers was a thing, you know? There was no OnlyFans for me, unfortunately, at that time. But we ran $2 billion in a deficit in our unemployment insurance, which, by the way, comes from businesses. They pay into that fund. Right, that's not just statement. So Pat McCrory gets into office and he and his administration, along with the legislature, they paid that thing down because we had to pay back the federal government that had bailed the state out to the tune of $2 billion. They were running deficits in Medicaid, Medicare, education spending, all of it. There were structural deficits, multi-billion dollars a year. People forget, or you weren't here for it. The Democrats withheld people's tax refunds in order to balance the budget one year. I had my tax refund withheld. That was my money. They took too much out of my paycheck and then wouldn't give it to me when they were supposed to. The state withheld reimbursement fees that they were supposed to pay back to the cities that had originally collected it and sent it up to the state as the collection mechanism. And then they're supposed to have gotten the reimbursements back down to the cities, and the state sat on those too. And I say all of those examples because what the daycares are asking for is completely in line with that completely stupid way of budgeting. That was one-time money. The COVID money was one-time money. Why are you trying to make it into ongoing funding? Right? If you built a budget based on one-time funding, you're an idiot. What are you teaching those babies in your daycare? A one-time chunk of money to pay for operations and employee salaries, that's a bridge. You're supposed to cross that bridge and get to the other side at some point. Here's a message from Russ. He says, as a small business owner, it is wild to me how big businesses want GovCo to step up for the daycare that their employees need to work there instead of upping pay to cover it themselves. Right. How dare you, business leaders? I mean, really, how dare you? Why don't you pay your people more money? Oh, well, you can't afford it. So what, you're just going to go take it from somebody else? Better yet, he says, get rid of the tax burdens that pressure families to be dual income. By the way, that is, I remember, I really do need to go and see if there's been more research on this, but the dual incomes with kids in daycare, usually if you have that kind of a scenario, whoever is not the breadwinner, whoever earns less in the dual income household, most of their salary, that second salary, gets eaten up by the daycare costs. So you're really working for like 10 to 20% of what you're taking home. You're actually paying, you're going to work and only taking in 10 or 20%. Yeah, I don't know what that sound is either. And so could you maybe save 10 or 20% out of your budget and stay at home with the kids, right? He says, it's crazy how many businesses and government agencies used and continue to use one-time emergency bailout money for the new programs and personnel hires, which mean ongoing expenses after the helicopter money runs out. Exactly. And this from Melissa, who says, if the child care is on site at the employment center and you want a day off, then obviously you can't drop the kid off at daycare. One then has to stay home with the kid. And where's the day off in that? All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.